Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org, as well as tapping into podcasts from prior shows. Today is January 24th, 2018. The markets were mixed today with the Dow closing slightly positive at 26,252, the NASDAQ sliding down to 74.15, and the S&P dropping slightly to 28.37. Our topic tonight is 2017 market review and 2018 outlook. We are live tonight. We'll take your questions. Lori C. is in the studio with us this evening. She'll answer the calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so that you can hear us without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments, and while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic, and I'll do my best to answer them. The number this evening is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. I'm excited to say that I have two guests this evening, Mr. Tim Roof and Connor Darrell. Tim Roof is a CFP professional, financial advisor, and vice president at Valley National Financial Advisors. Tim assists clients with comprehensive financial planning, including retirement plans, investment management, risk management, tax planning, and preparation. He believes that working with individuals and families on long-term planning and navigating financial options requires a relationship based on mutual respect and understanding. He's also part of the Valley National Financial Advisors Investment Committee, providing experienced, in-depth financial analysis to determine appropriate investment opportunities for clients. Connor Darrell is a senior associate and head of investments at Valley National. Connor leads the firm's investment committee and research efforts. It is Connor's job to provide investment analysis and assist VNFA's advisory teams with portfolio strategy and asset allocation. In this role, he meets frequently with representatives from global asset managers to discuss their views about the economy and financial markets. Connor is also a Level 3 candidate for the Chartered Financial Analyst designation, which we're very proud of him. Tim, you've been here before. Welcome back. Thanks for coming. I think it was back in October you were here and we talked about investment terms. And
yeah, good evening. Thanks for having me back again.
Yeah. So because Connor hasn't been here before, I want to give Connor the opportunity to chat for a minute. Connor, can you let folks know what's your background? What brought you to this kind of position and why do you like investments so much?
Sure. So I went to Gettysburg College. I majored in economics there. Kind of got involved with the investment portfolio there and the student-run clubs, and I just found that I really enjoyed it. So from that point, I kind of just started pursuing that passion. But I guess you can also say I'm relatively new to the Lehigh Valley in general, and that I didn't grow up around here. I grew up in central New Jersey in a small town called Cream Ridge. That's really probably more of a cluster of horse farms than it is a town. But after that, I ended up at Gettysburg, studied economics and played soccer. So now I'm a proud resident of Bethlehem Township.
Oh, I didn't realize you're in Bethlehem Township now. So that's good. I've got to stay plugged in a little bit more, I guess. But thanks for coming. I really appreciate it. So listeners, we're talking about the kind of looking back, the 2017 market review, and then looking forward, the 2018 outlook. And I thought, who better to have on than Tim and Connor, because they live and breathe this stuff. So with recapping that, why don't we start with the review of 2017 so we can get an idea of exactly how we got to where we are. So 2017 was a strong year around the globe with, you know, equity markets closing at or near all-time highs. So can you kind of provide us with a summary of the key themes that drove markets higher, either Connor or Tim?
Sure. So I think one of the interesting things about 2017 was that coming into the year, if you were to kind of poll of asset managers around the world, that they were not expecting there to be significant returns. Things were expected to be kind of muted. We've obviously been in a bull market for a really long time now, and one of the big surprises was that, the market, all it did was take off, and over 20% returns in the S&P, and internationally it was even higher. And a lot of that was driven by an uptick in kind of a synchronized economic growth picture around the globe and improvements in corporate earnings as well.
So do you think, sorry, Tim, I'm going to jump in here real quick with a question, because you said no one was expecting it, but was it they weren't expecting it really because we had had so many years of performance in the market?
Yeah, that's certainly part of it. I think, we've just been in this long, kind of prolonged, slow period of economic growth for a long period of time. And, there's an old saying that, bull markets don't die of old age. And I think that's definitely true. But I think a lot of it has to do with starting point. You know, if you start higher up on the mountain, you're more likely, or there's a less chance that you're going to get to the end quicker, to the summit quicker. So,
okay. And there was this large focus on the political uncertainty at the time when 2017 started. So many folks had thought, and investment managers thought, that we may see a lot of volatility throughout the year. And really, there was muted volatility as we went through 2017. And that had a lot to do with the fact that earnings growth exceeded expectations, as well as global growth. It's the first time we saw a synchronized growth around the world since 2011 from all major economies. So all those things kind of contributed to the market movements to go up, and we're seeing that continue now through in the start of 2018.
So because a number of reasons, then people didn't necessarily, you're already at the top, how much longer can this last? I think you're right, political uncertainty, that's what we were hearing a lot of people talking about. They were worried about the political environment and what impact that would have. And I think people, sometimes you get the sense that they are still worried about that. But would you say there's the economic indicators, earnings, and that type of thing has bared itself out?
Well, the stock market historically follows earnings growth, or trends to earnings growth over time. And as long as earnings growth continues to be healthy and expectations continue to be healthy, normally that'll help support the stock market moving into the future.
So earnings and economic growth helped. Tax reform, how much of an impact? Because we really didn't get that till the end. So weren't we thinking that maybe if tax reform didn't go through, that would have had some kind of impact, but then it did?
Yeah, and certainly the market, I think a big part of the reason why the market rallied in 2017 was this expectation of, tax reform is coming, and we're going to reduce corporate tax rates and bring a lot of money back from overseas. Really, what was particularly surprising to me was, even after all of this started to come through, we still saw the market continue to take off. So that was evident that, not all of it was priced in, but some of the optimism was definitely there.
That's a good way to look at it. It wasn't all priced in, and that's why we saw it continue to climb after the tax reform went through. And monetary policy, how does that impact?
Yeah, monetary policy, we're still seeing very accommodative monetary policy here from the Federal Reserve. They have been tightening. The expectations are they will continue to tighten now over 2018. But historically, rates still remain low and still remain at levels that are favorable for the economy and economic growth. And not just here, there's also other foreign economies that are still in their very accommodative phases and stimulating their economies. While here we're more in now, I would say, in the tightening phase.
Okay. When we're coming up on our first break, but when we come back, could we just briefly kind of in simple terms explain accommodative policies? I just lost my train of thought.
Tightening and stimulating.
Yes.
The economy.
So let's kind of go over what that means briefly in the U.S. and then maybe globally. Mm-hmm. And has it been a bit of a ripple effect that started X number of years ago that is what has provided that synchronized, what do you call it?
Global growth.
Yeah. Okay. All right. We're coming up on our first break. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
In 2018, WDIY is celebrating 23 years on the air. If you listen to WDIY, support the station by becoming a member today. Members are our most reliable source of support, and we couldn't be here without you. To become a member, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 7. WDIY, serving the Lehigh Valley and beyond.
Welcome back to the show. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. This is your host, Lori Siebert, and I have in the studio with me this evening Tim Roof, CFP, Financial Advisor and Vice President, Valley National Financial Advisors, and Connor Darrell, Senior Associate and Head of Investments at Valley National as well. And it was nice because I could easily tap two people quickly to talk about what's going on in the markets. And what we are starting with was kind of a look back to see what went on in 2017, maybe why. So the 2017 market review, and then we're going to move on and talk about the 2018 outlook. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810, and you can talk live with us on air. But if you're not comfortable talking live on air, you can just give your question to Lori C., and she'll write it down and bring it into the studio. So you don't have to be shy either way. 610-758-8810. And we had someone call in. This is a tax question, it looks like, off air. Sean from Bethlehem Township had said he's filing his taxes. He got married in October of 2017. Should I file 2017 married or single, and why? And Tim and I could probably answer that very quickly. Tim,
congratulations, first and foremost.
Oh, so nice. I go right to business.
So you'll have the opportunity now to file a married filing jointly return. And in all likelihood, most cases, that will be the most preferential way for you to file from a tax savings standpoint.
Okay, thanks, Tim. And Sean, quite often, if you're using software like that you've bought from the store, that kind of software sometimes will tell you if one is better than the other. But as Tim said, it's generally better to be married filing joint. Thanks for the call. Thanks for the question. Again, 610-758-8810. So looking back at the 2017 kind of market review, at the end of our last break, we were talking about accommodative monetary policy in general. Frankly, a lot of people who aren't living and breathing this every day don't know what that means, but I know that it has a significant impact, I'm sure, on the markets and what's happening. So for the advisor who's not plugged into all of these economic terms, can you kind of give us an overview, Connor, about what that all means? And
sure. So you hear a lot about the Fed. Obviously, the Federal Reserve is the central bank of the United States, and they really have a dual mandate. Their two jobs are to target growth and inflation. And as a means of targeting those things, they play a lot in the bond market and manipulate interest rates. So when we say accommodative monetary policy, we're typically referring to an environment where interest rates have been reduced. And the goal there is really to stimulate lending in the economy. Mm-hmm. So if you lower interest rates, it makes it cheaper to borrow, and that encourages people to invest in their businesses, to found new businesses. And the theory there is that ultimately economic growth will follow. And obviously the flip side of that is obviously now we're moving into a period of tightening, as we said, and that will be increasing interest rates, and that's kind of the opposite effect.
So how do they make the decision to switch from, because they see growth already happening in the economy, so they say they don't have to be accommodative anymore?
So the Fed's monitoring very closely growth rates. They're also monitoring unemployment and as well as inflation. So that those are some of the top three areas that they're really looking at on a regular basis to decide how they're going to act with their monetary policy moving forward. And now many investors are looking at what they say in regards to inflation and also how they see growth coming through in the data that they're monitoring on a regular basis.
There's a lot of moving parts.
There is.
So let's talk about growth. So you guys said economic growth, it gained momentum in 2017. How do we measure that growth, and what are some of the things you look for when evaluating the health of the economy?
So one of the first things we look at is kind of consumers. We're a consumer-based economy. So we look at how confident are our consumers in the economy, how confident are they that they're going to continue to have a job. And the more confident consumers are, the more likely they are to go out and continue spending. And keeping the economy going is all about spending. So that's one of the trends we obviously watch. Go ahead.
And the consumers will probably see a little bit of a bump in their pay coming in February due to tax reform. So that'll also help the consumers.
Okay.
Yeah, and we've seen that trending higher over the past several years. We also look at things like retail sales and wage growth, which are kind of very similar to that health of the consumer measurement that we talk about. Both of those have been very positive as well.
So the retail sales, so buying isn't always just retail, but that's just one of the indicators.
Right.
What about when you hear about the consumer, volatility or the consumer index of their confidence in the economy? Isn't there an index for that?
Yeah, the University of Michigan publishes the Consumer Confidence Index, and they through polls, they track various information, and that's how they come up with their level indicator. And we've seen that very strong numbers of recent, and especially over the last year or so.
Okay. So consumer confidence, retail sales. Retail sales could include at the department stores, online shopping, I suppose, maybe large purchases. Does that doesn't include housing, or does it? Retail sales, I guess that would include housing. Okay, but they probably look at housing.
Yeah, there are separate indicators for the housing market.
Okay, and then wages. So now not only are we confident, we're spending, we're looking for wage growth as well. And over the past, recently you're seeing that the minimum wage went up, but the minimum wage is going up in various states too. Some states raised minimum wage on their own. When we're looking at the markets and the growth and the consumer confidence, does it ever drill down to by state at all? Where if we've seen higher minimum wages in particular states, are we seeing their economies doing better? Do people pay attention to it at that granular level?
They try to average it out across the states when they're looking at inflation.
Okay. And then employment and unemployment. You said that they look at that. But right now, we've had some of the lowest unemployment, right? And that's been a trend where we've been seeing unemployment get smaller and smaller.
Yeah, unemployment has been declining steadily, and looks like we're about to drop below 4%, which is fantastic. And it's really going to be one of the lowest numbers that we've seen since prior to the tech bubble in the late 90s, early 2000s. And if it drops any lower than that, it could be the lowest number and even decades beyond that as well. So that's a really positive number. Additionally, what that could also kind of trigger is if you kind of think about the economy as a balloon, right? We've talked about accommodative monetary policy. That's kind of the air being pressed into the balloon. And ultimately, when you get to the latter stages of these bull markets, you kind of get that tension. You can think of it as a balloon being close to capacity. Mm-hmm. And if you think about the unemployment rate in that context, unemployment rate coming down is usually, when we get to that bottom there, it's very close to the economy being at capacity. And that's when you start to see inflation tick up because employers people who are looking for jobs, there's less of them, and they tend to have a little bit more bargaining power. They can kind of negotiate higher wages. And when you have higher wages, that translates to higher costs for businesses, and they then pass those costs on to consumers in the form of higher prices. So it's kind of all intertwined.
Interesting. And then corporate earnings, how does that come into the... Well, you know what? We're coming up on a break, so let's come back to that. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. If you need something explained, maybe there's something you just haven't understood when we're talking about the markets and the economy. Not that we're economists sitting here, but it's certainly something we have to pay attention to when we're looking at market performance and you know, investments, et cetera. The phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org. WDIY, Lehigh Valley's community NPR station.
Welcome back to the show. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I have in the studio with me Tim Roof and Connor Darrell. We are talking about the 2017 market review, and then we're going to discuss maybe what the expectations are for 2018. So looking back at 2017, we were talking about the influences on the market, the expectations, what happened, why, and some of the factors that go into economic growth and what we're watching when we're looking at the health of the economy. Connor had mentioned we look at consumer confidence, we look at, and how do we measure that? We're looking at retail sales, wage growth, we look at corporate earnings and GDP. So Connor and Tim, if you could take a moment to talk a little bit about corporate earnings, what the impact of that is. Tim, you might have touched on that briefly, but Connor, just to kind of finish up talking about 2017 and looking back and these things that impact as we're now going to look forward. So these are kind of the bridge for what happened in 2017 and what we're going to look forward into 2018. Talk a little bit about corporate earnings, and then if we could talk about what does gross domestic product mean. So first, corporate earnings.
So corporate earnings, we chatted about a little earlier. The market loosely tracks corporate earnings growth over time, and earnings growth was above expectations in 2017 and 2018 as consensus expectations per FactSet are looking to be in the mid-double-digit range now currently. And that has to do with the fact that the economy has been picking up some, but it also some recent changes due to the tax reform and how that will benefit earnings growth as well.
Well, that's really interesting, and I hope that I can remember the question I want to ask you when we move through the show, because you just said the corporate earnings, that there's a chance we could be expecting double digits. So what I want to come back to when we're talking about 2018 is, if look at the way the markets have performed in the past year, now people are going to get all excited because they're going to think if corporate earnings are expected to be double digits, they're going to think, oh, maybe we're going to, you know, ride this for a while longer. So let's not forget to kind of come back to that. What about gross domestic product? Because you always hear people saying, you know, oh, GDP, GDP. You know, what does it mean to the investor, Connor?
At a very simple level, GDP is, I'm going to go back and use this silly balloon analogy again, but the GDP is basically the size of the balloon. How big is the economy? What's the value of everything that's being produced in the economy? And we track that because we want to know how fast it's growing. If the economy is growing, obviously that's very healthy and we want that to continue. Right now, the Fed, as I mentioned before, the Federal Reserve, they've kind of forecast some of these things. And right now, they're projecting a 2.5% GDP growth in real terms. And that takes account of inflation as well. So that's the one that we track more closely. which is a strong number given it's above trend based on the last couple of years. And we've seen some other estimates that are beyond that as well. And a big part of that is tax reform, as Tim touched upon earlier.
Okay. So GDP, we're talking about the United States, but other countries track it similarly as well?
Yeah, for the most part, it's measured pretty consistently across the world. And one of the reasons we saw global markets take off last year is that we had this kind of synchronized uptick in economic GDP growth around the world. And if you look at internationally, the markets were up even higher than in the U.S.
Okay, cool. All right, so let's kind of now we've set the table. We've kind of looked back at 2017, what the expectations were. We've talked about what impacts or what we have to watch when we're looking at changes in the market and the economy. So now let's look at some of the key things we're going to look at for 2018. So what are the buzzwords? What are we watching? All these moving parts. What are we looking for?
We're looking at interest rates, inflation, growth, and geopolitical risks that could come about from time to time.
Okay, rising interest rates, global growth, you said, mm-hmm. inflation, and geopolitical risk. So it seems like, you know, whenever we're picking up the newspaper, turning on the news, people are talking about rising interest rates. We hear it every single day. So let's talk about that. So how should investors be thinking about rising rates and what they can do to best position their portfolios?
Well, rising rates for savers, those that have savings accounts, cash accounts, CDs, it's good for those investors because they'll see their returns go up over time because interest rates, they'll receive higher interest rates on their savings amounts. Bond investors, it may not always be as good for over time because when rates rise, the principal value of their bond drops inversely to the interest rate increase that they received on their bond. So, you know, it's reasonable to expect that the bond market may underperform its historic averages over the next several years as we go through this tightening process.
Okay. I want to go over that just for one more second about the bondholders, because I think this is something people who have been investing for a long time, I'm sure they get it. But for people who are new to investing, they may not understand that inverse relationship between bonds. So you mentioned rising interest rates are great for the short term, maybe investor or for the bank accounts, the CDs, that kind of thing. What if I'm just now investing in bonds for the first time? Does the same apply that if I'm going into bonds today for the first time, are these rising interest rates also good for me? But if I'm someone who's been in bonds for years and years, you said it's going to impact the price of the bond. So explain that inverse relationship. So for the new bond owner and then someone who's held bonds for a while.
Sure. I think the same general principle applies to whether you're buying a bond now or you've held one for a period of time. Typically, it depends upon how interest rates move from this point forward. So if interest rates move up and you have a bond that's paying a 2% coupon, let's say, and by that I mean it's just paying you 2% of your principal every year. If interest rates now rise and they go above 2%, or in relative terms, your bond now looks a little bit less attractive. So that's generally why the price of the bond you're holding tends to decline. Now, if you're holding that bond until maturity, then you're less concerned about that because you know that you know exactly what you're getting. You're going to get 2% every year, and at the end, you're going to get all of your principal back, assuming that the entity that you bought the bond from does not go bankrupt. So really, it comes down to, you know, that's one of the strategies for kind of defending against some of this interest rate risk that we're talking about is to buy a bond and hold it to maturity. If you know that bond is going to provide you with the income that you need, then you don't need to worry about the ebbs and flows of the price of the bond over time because you know exactly what you're going to get.
And don't forget why you hold bonds in the first place. The reason why you hold bonds is generally to manage risk in your overall portfolio. And there's really not many investments that can manage risk like bonds can when there's an adverse impact to the overall economy. So be aware that, you know, bonds are important. It can help with the downside risk management as well as provide income for your overall financial plan.
I think that's a great point and great reference that if people are investing in bonds and they know that they're going to be okay with that rate and they hold it to maturity, they aren't subject to the fluctuations. But if they are someone who goes into one long term and they're going to have to start tapping that, they're going to be subject to it. So you really kind of have to understand your own cash flow situation and the investments that you have, the underlying investments, and what exposure you have to that. And are you going to be kind of a victim almost to rising rates in the event that you need to tap money sooner? All right. So we're learning a lot. So we're talking about interest rates, rising interest rates, how they impact. We talked about short-term bonds, bond ladders. So we'll talk a little bit more about any other investments that may be impacted by that when we come back. Folks, we're coming up at the halfway point. If you have questions, this is complicated stuff for folks who don't do it regularly. 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
This is WDIY. It's 6:30. Your current temperature is 30. Tonight it's going to get a low around 20 degrees. And also tonight on Thursday, you're going to be sunny, high near 30 degrees. Thursday night, mostly clear with a low around 15. Friday, sunny, high near 40. Friday night, mostly clear with a low around 28. And Saturday, mostly sunny with a high near 51. And for your Saturday night, rain and mostly cloudy, low around 39. Now back to your financial choices with Lori Seabrook. Bird.
Thank you, Shandi. Welcome back to the show. I have with me this evening Tim Roof, CFP, and Connor Darrell, Senior Associate at Valley National Financial Advisors. We're talking about investments. Both are part of the investment committee there and are kind of monitoring what's going on in the economy regularly. Before we kind of go back to rising interest rates, and I'll summarize that in a minute, can you guys just for a moment give us a glimpse into what is involved with kind of managing all this? Is it what we have been talking about, where you're looking at the, you know, the GDP, the consumer confidence, the economy? There's more beyond just that that you're looking at when you're talking about the investments that you're looking at for, you know, clients, right?
Certainly. I mean, we're looking at the capital market assumptions where we are looking forward when it comes to those items that you mentioned. But well beyond that, valuations are important because it could give you an idea of historically where we are from a valuation standpoint if markets are overpriced, underpriced. So it's a way to manage your risk and the diversify your overall portfolio when you consider those factors.
Okay. All right. So we were talking about the rising interest rates because so many people, that's what they're always talking about. What if we have rising interest rates? And we talked about the impact on that for the short-term investor, bank accounts, short-term bonds, that type of thing. And then for people who've held bonds. Any other, you know, rising interest rate impact that we need to think about at this point before we move on to talking about equities?
From a planning perspective, if you're a borrower and you have a mortgage or other debt, maybe in the past you weren't able to refinance because you had lower credit, but now you've corrected your credit, you're at a good position. Now's a good time still to look to refinance that mortgage if you have a higher interest rate. You could save thousands of dollars over that period of your mortgage if you do so. Also be aware that, you know, possibly if you have a line of credit, line of credits were very inexpensive to have previously, but they're in a lot of cases tied to the prime rate, and the prime rate has been rising because the Fed has been increasing rates. So you may even want to look into locking into a fixed rate home equity or some other, instrument that will lock in the rate versus having that variable rate go up over time, which could maybe be more costly to you.
Or sometimes, too, looking at those CDs or bank accounts or short-term bonds that you're holding that might be at a lower rate that you could use savings to pay off the loans a little sooner sometimes as well. People aren't always going to get the tax, you know, benefit of itemizing like they have in the past. So it might be time to revisit what they're doing with those investments. Okay, let's move on to, we've talked about bonds. Let's talk about stocks now. It seems like the stocks market just keeps going up and up and everybody's getting caught up in that. Can it continue and for how long? And we're guessing, right? The balloon, we never know when that balloon's going to pop, yeah. Connor.
Yeah, you don't know how well it's made. I think it's definitely a valid concern to be thinking about, you know, where we are from a valuation standpoint, especially in the U.S. When you look, compare that to international stocks, we do look a little bit expensive in historical terms. But I think, you know, the short answer is that there are grounds for the market to continue climbing, and we've talked about a lot of those factors earlier in the show. So I think that certainly we can, but albeit from a higher starting point, which over time you would expect that to reduce the longer term returns.
And it's reasonable to expect moving forward that we not to expect these double digit returns that we've seen from the stock market over the last several years. It's time to maybe reset your expectations moving forward over the next 5 to 10 years and look for reasonable returns from stocks and earnings growth, maybe in the mid-single to on the higher end, possibly upper single digits versus the double-digit returns that we've experienced. It's only normal being now that we're heading into the ninth year of this economic cycle.
Well, you fell right into the question I didn't want to forget to ask you earlier, which is when you hear about expected double-digit growth in earnings from corporations, companies, domestic, what have you, better expectations even globally, the attitude might be that people think we're going to continue with this. You've just said maybe we should reevaluate our expectations. And what I want to demonstrate for the listener is that it's not just looking at one thing, though. And people start focusing in on one thing and they get caught up in that excitement. And we have just been talking for a half an hour about all of the things that impact the market and what you have to watch, right? We have to watch the monetary policy. We have to watch the GDP, the consumer confidence, geopolitical risk, all of these things. So one of the lessons is it's not just about one thing. We can't get focused on that, right? So how does someone, you know, and you can talk to that, but I kind of want to say, how does someone kind of know how to navigate expectations or, you know, working with an advisor? I mean, you know, other than that, what do you do?
Yeah, it's a good point. You know, we can enumerate all these positive things about the economy and growth and the fundamentals are there. And that's certainly true. But the market doesn't move on things that everybody already knows. The market moves on new information. So if we're expecting 10% growth and everyone's expecting 10% earnings growth, then the market's already going to be reflecting those expectations in the prices. So what we're kind of laying out is that the foundation is there for stocks to continue to climb higher, but it's going to be what ultimately will determine the final destination is kind of some of that information that might not be widely incorporated into prices yet.
And as a saver or investor or retiree, you have to think about what are your goals? And if you're conservative and that's going to help you meet your long-term goals, meet your income needs or meet your savings goals, stay the course. Keep that diversified asset allocation. Same thing if you're a moderately allocated investor and saver. Stay the course over time and rebalance when necessary, because one thing to bring to mind is the fact that the stock markets we talked about have performed very well over the last several years. So if you haven't touched your portfolio in 3, 4, 5 years or so, your stocks are what were once 60% are going to be much higher than 60% in your portfolio. So it's a good time to take this, take the time, rebalance the portfolio, and bring that back to your tolerance level, which might be 60% of your overall portfolio.
Okay, good advice. We had a caller call in off air, Alan from Allentown. He asked if we could expand on the bond topic a bit. He said his 401k is a mix of bonds and commercial paper being managed by the company. So that's interesting because we, in today's 401k world, quite often we have the participant managing their own, usually from a menu of items, but occasionally we still find that there might be 401ks out there that the employer is managing. So Alan, it's not always as common as what you might think. So you're asking, what should your strategy be? So managed by the company, maybe the company, because if you're asking for a strategy, it means the company might give you that menu versus them selecting that particular investment. So expand on the bond topic, commercial paper, looking at maybe bond exposure in a 401k. Well, let me start by saying that it's a fiduciary responsibility of the 401k to offer a wide variety of investment options. It has to be a diversified option, as Tim, you were just saying, the very importance of diversification. So commercial paper, what's...
Yeah, I think to kind of expound on his question, I think I would go back to what Tim said without kind of getting too specific in terms of specific investment recommendations. But Tim pointed out that you want to remember why you have bonds in your portfolio. And I know we've kind of talked about how rising interest rates could be a headwind for the bond market. But ultimately, you hold bonds because they offer you kind of a ballast in your portfolio in the event that equity markets take a turn or there's a spike in volatility. And that role will always be there whether interest rates are increasing or decreasing. So there is an argument to keep the bonds in the portfolio. I'd say you want to strike a nice balance between stocks and bonds, depending upon your age and other circumstances, your risk tolerance and things of that nature. But I would just want to avoid kind of scaring people, so to speak, in that, you know, thinking that bonds are poised for this terrible return period. I don't think that's necessarily true.
Okay, that was a good clarification then, and a good question then for Alan, and gave us the opportunity to clarify that. Tim, did you want to?
Yeah, and just, you know, if you have the selection within your 401k, just try to get your arms around what's there, what's available, and what are the risks of investing in those individual pieces. If there's more than one bond option in your 401k, understand the differences between those bond options in your 401k, because not all bonds are made alike.
And Alan, I would expect there's was several years ago strict requirements for 401ks to provide disclosures to their participants as to the returns, performance, and cost of the underlying funds within a 401k menu. So I would expect that you may receive that information electronically, but that certainly would also kind of, I believe it identifies usually the allocation and what kind of sector or that you're in as well. So good luck with that. Alan had also asked a question is in regards to a FAFSA form. Tim, you may be able to jump into this or I can just answer it. He's asking, should he lease or buy a vehicle? So the FAFSA form, typically you're reporting your investment accounts, what bank accounts, not retirement accounts, and liabilities.
Yeah, so you would have your assets that the FAFSA form would require, not necessarily, like you said, that the retirement assets that they'll take into consideration on FAFSA. But if you buy the car, it will obviously use some of your savings or bank accounts, so that would reduce the amount of assets that you would have reported on your FAFSA.
For the expected family contribution. Okay, Alan, thank you so much for calling in. We appreciate it. We are talking about the 2018 outlook as well, and I want to make sure that I have toward the end of the show time for Connor and Tim maybe to just kind of talk free flow because they have so much knowledge and information and perspective on what they're looking at and watching for when we're looking at investing in particular. But for 2018, we were separated, moving beyond the bonds, talking about stock. We talked about GDP growth already, labor markets. I don't know if we've talked much about manufacturing. What do you guys think about all of, you know, we hear in the news all this money that's might going to be coming back, the repatriation of the money from corporations that had had it offshore or in, you know, Europe or something, Apple. Do you think that money really is going to come back? And has there been much talk about manufacturing and building plants? And are we going to see more of that? Is there talk about that?
I think we've already seen that to a certain extent. Even recently we saw Walmart announce that they are going to be increasing the starting wages for a lot of their workers. Now, I'd caveat that with, you know, tax reform has been in the news for such a long period of time, and we've been talking about this, that it would be difficult for them to not do anything because people know that they're getting a break.
Yeah.
And, you know, from a PR perspective, it would be silly for them to not, you know, pass some of that to their workers, as the politicians have said they would. But I think we'll start to see that on a larger scale as well. And do you have anything to add on that?
I think we'll see that over the next several quarters that these things will start to unfold. Corporations are still, as we are, as taxpayers, and getting our hands around the tax reform and how to, you know, design that to our personal situations. So there is the opportunity for additional plants and jobs from that standpoint when you look at the corporate tax reform that has occurred.
Okay. I suppose, too, with the lower unemployment, places like Walmart would, as probably safety for themselves, raise wages a little bit to kind of make sure that those experienced employees stay with them.
Yeah, because there is going to be that theme we're talking
about. Yeah. Okay. When we come back, we're going to finish up. If you have questions, there's still plenty of time. 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000. Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100, extension 6, or WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY. Just want to mention that you can listen online each and every week at WDIY.org. You can stream online with us. And if you can't catch the show or you have friends or relatives who are interested in maybe some of the topics we're talking about, podcast prior shows are always available at WDIY.org under Programs, Your Financial Choices, and search by topic, or the website Your Financial Choices, if that's easier to remember. We were talking about, are there expectations for more manufacturing, building, you know, corporations who are bringing money back, the repatriation? And Connor, you had said you wanted to add a thought to that as well.
Yeah, well, I think a lot's obviously been made of how this impacts corporations, and that was a lot of what was discussed in kind of that trickle-down economics that gets discussed in the media a lot. But I think one thing that's particularly interesting about the tax bill From an economic perspective, according to the Joint Committee on Taxation, which is an independent group, if you look at the 2019, what's anticipated in terms of tax cuts for 2019, about 70% of that $259 billion that's anticipated to be the total tax cut, that's all going to households. Ooh. Now, I do not have the specific details on which types of households that would all go to, but that's a big chunk of money, and that's good news for consumers.
So then that would further support what we were talking about, the consumer confidence, right? And spending, and then spending boosts and helps the economy.
Exactly.
Okay. Do you want to touch for a moment on geopolitical risks? Some people have been worried about that. But just as we thought political risk within this country might have affected the market, we didn't see that it did in 2017. What about, you know, globally?
So geopolitical at risk is definitely a concern when you look out into the, you know, into the past or into the future. But at the same point, you shouldn't try to make your investment decisions based on what goes on in these types of instances. If you look back long term or historically, these types of events are normally short term in nature, and markets tend to recover in a shorter period of time, just due to the fact that the market focuses on growth rather than what's going on in politics. Politics can create at times volatility, but long term, you want to stay focused on your plan and what that means to you.
Okay. We have a caller on line three. We have Richard. Richard, can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
Good. How can we help you?
I appreciate you taking the call.
Sure.
I think one of your guests just mentioned an area of concern for me is sometimes I'm trying to see a correlation between the market numbers and what is happening on the ground, so to speak.
Hmm.
In other words, when there was, hurricanes in Florida and in southeastern Texas,
mm-hmm.
and Puerto Rico,
mm-hmm.
And there's been wildfires in California and flooding in California, and then we had a recent scare, missile alert, in Hawaii. I don't see the market losing any confidence.
Yeah.
You'd think, right? Like, you're scared when you hear about it, and then you don't see a reaction.
Yeah, and even internationally last year, I mean, we had the leader of North Korea come out and say he wants to blow the United States off the face of the earth, and then the market just shrugged that off. It's hard to explain. With some of the natural disasters you were referring to, some of those things, when you kind of boil it down from an economic standpoint, can actually increase economic growth very briefly because you have all this rebuilding that's going on, and obviously it's terrible, and people are negatively impacted, but sometimes you get a little bit of an uptick, which is a little bit paradoxical, but yeah, I would just echo what Tim's point, and that's that, you know, I wouldn't recommend building a portfolio strategy around preparing for some kind of geopolitical event. If anything, it's an argument for a diversified portfolio, because a diversified portfolio is going to be better suited to kind of weather those storms and help you to tolerate some of those kind of ebbs and flows that occur from the market as a result of these crises.
And making sure you have an emergency reserve as well.
Right. And if you have a portfolio designed to manage and meet your risk tolerance and your return goals over time, you won't be as prominent to be emotional with your investing, and with emotions you can sometimes make bad investment decisions that could derail your long-term plan.
Okay, Richard.
That sounds like we have to assume that we'll have a kind of a normal future with the normal kind of
returns,
peaks and valleys.
It's all about focusing on the long term.
Right.
One other question would be for people who would be more or less on, say, have some fixed income streams,
mm-hmm.
whether it would be, pension annuities or Social Security or something like that. My feeling is that there's an anticipation that inflation might start to kick in a bit and take some of the purchasing power out of a fixed income situation.
And that's definitely possible. Our advice, but overall from a perspective, you want to look at, budgeting closely and monitoring and managing that budget and making sure you're sticking to it, because, that could be an effect to folks when inflation kicks in and they're on the static income stream. So it's going to be even more important to follow a well-designed budget.
That's a great advice. Richard, thank you so much for calling.
Thank you.
Okay, have a good night. Thank you, Tim. That's good. And that is why you want to do financial planning and realize that every area of your financial life could impact another area. It's not just about your investments. It's about your cash flow. So I appreciate that. You guys, we have about 4 minutes left. So let's talk a little bit about... we've talked about some of the risk in the market that people have been paying attention to already. Tim and Connor, you've both talked about those throughout the show, about valuations. Are they a little bit too frothy? Things like that, stocks, bonds. Looking at earnings growth. So it looks like for 2018, we might still expect that there would be some earnings growth with some of the stimulus that have been put out there, like with tax reform and corporate earnings and bringing back some of that money. Interest rates, inflation is something that has to be watched, right?
Yes.
We talked about monetary policy, and there still could be monetary policy that could still be influencing those interest rates, though, and that inflation, right? So we have bumper guards on that, so to speak, or could, right? They don't always just let that go free.
Right. They're going to be watching that very closely. And I think moving forward, the Fed is going to be really, really careful with making sure that if it is going to change policy, it's going to make sure that the market is fully aware of what it's doing. The last thing the Federal Reserve wants to do is surprise markets and cause some kind of volatile event to transpire. So I think they'll be extremely careful about that.
And we didn't always have that as much in the past.
Yeah, this is...
like years ago.
In historical terms, this is an unprecedented amount of central bank intervention in the global economy on a global scale. It's kind of, in many ways, somewhat experimental.
And I have to say that the Fed has been quite good at communicating to the general public on what's going on and what their plans are moving forward. And overall, Connor said a word in there, it was volatile. And I just want to, bring up the fact that we haven't seen volatility in a while in the marketplace, and it's not unusual. I just want to kind of pass that information on. The corrections happen once every 2 to 3 years. We haven't had a correction, I believe, since early 2016, meaning a pullback of 10% or more. But normally, they're a normal occurrence, and they're healthy for the longer term continued growth and extension of the economic cycle.
Yeah, and volatility is not necessarily a bad thing. Financial markets are the only marketplace in the entire world where when everything goes on sale, everybody leaves the store. So I think that's kind of, you want to keep that in mind, is when we have bouts of volatility, it can be a buying opportunity.
Sorry, I was paying attention there for a second and trying to imagine, everything goes on sale and everybody leaves the store. So Connor, with your analogies tonight, I'm picturing balloons, I'm picturing the store, et cetera. So all good comments. Let's wrap up. I want to give you guys time to kind of give us some last thoughts. So Connor, if you want to take a minute and give us some of your last thoughts, maybe some general suggestions or tips of what to watch for as we headed to 2018.
Yeah, I think the number one thing, like we mentioned multiple times earlier, is to keep focused on the long term. In terms of 2018, I think the one thing, from my perspective, that could potentially surprise markets is if we do have that uptick in inflation that the caller mentioned. I think it was Richard. You know, if that surprises markets, we could get a little bit of volatility. But I think it's important to remember that, as we discussed throughout the show, that the foundations of the economy are still looking quite strong, which is a positive.
Okay, Tim.
And from a personal perspective, just make sure you have a plan, you know, a cash flow management plan. What's your savings plan? Or if you're in the retirement income phase, you know, how do you have your portfolio allocated to provide that income and that security where you're managing your risks overall and providing some level of security for your long-term success.
Okay. Just lost my thought again. Sorry, guys. I'm going on vapors these days, so I'm so happy you were here tonight. Tim, if people wanted to contact you, how do they reach you?
They can reach me at work, 610-868-9000. My email is also troof@valleynationalgroup.com.
And Connor? Same phone number.
610-868-9000. And my email is cdarrell, C as in Connor, D as in David, A-R-R-E-L-L.
And Connor's going to Wall Street tomorrow. You're going to the stock exchange.
Yeah, I am. There's an event there that Goldman Sachs is putting on. So I wish it was yesterday. I think I could have brought back some insights. But either way, I'm looking forward to it.
Well, maybe we can get someone from Goldman to come on and share some of their knowledge with us as well. So I really appreciate both of you guys coming on. I know it's complicated, a complicated topic, but there's actually so much information to share that it's trying to boil it down into some bullet points and guidelines for folks to better understand their own situation and what is, generating all of this activity in the market and impacting it as well. So thanks so much for being here. And we hope to do this at least quarterly and more often. So thanks for being here, Connor and Tim. Thanks, Lori, for taking the calls. Thanks, listeners. Thanks, Shandi, as well. Next week, I have attorney Dennis Pappas coming on. We're going to talk about conversations around tax and cash flow planning as part of the estate plan. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller within the tradition folk music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive, and make the best of your financial choices. Have a great week.
Thank you, Lori, and thank you, guests. This is WDIY Allentown. Your current temperature is 30. Tomorrow is going to be partly sunny with a high of 35. Thursday night, mostly clear with a low around 15. Friday, sunny with a high near 40. And Friday night, mostly clear with a low around 28. On Saturday, it's going to be sunny with a high near 51. And Saturday night, it's going to have a lot of rain, but it will be low around 39. Sunday night, mostly cloudy with a low around 33 degrees. Keep it here on WDIY.